Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast. I'm Chaz Hathaway. We've got a couple of near death experiences to share today, and possibly three if I'm feeling up to it. You could probably tell from my voice I'm getting over a bug. It was pretty severe last week, but now it's just kind of a residual voice deal. So, first off, we have Earl from NDERF.org. In fact, these are all three from NDERF.org. So, Earl says, December 27th, 1977. I was a self-employed stained glass contractor. I was on my way to church to give them a bid on new stained glass windows. It was approximately 8 a.m. Going around a curve, I saw a logging truck in the opposite lane. Suddenly, a car came around the log truck into my lane. Next, I'm floating above the accident scene, watching two ambulance attendants take me out of my pickup. They said, "Well, we don't have to worry about this one." It started getting darker. Then I started moving faster and faster, darker and darker, like I'm in a tunnel. I see a pinpoint of light, brighter and brighter. Sudden stop. I'm standing, facing the most perfect person I have ever seen. The light was coming from him. He was the light. I recognize him as Jesus Christ. I have the most wonderful feeling of peace. He said, "I'm sorry, you can't stay. There is something you must do." Next, I'm lying on a table. A nurse is asking me if I know who I am. They sent me by ambulance to the hospital to see a specialist because my face was shattered and cut. He said I was fine. Spent an hour sewing me up. Next day, I was back at work. 25 years later, I'm still wondering what it is I'm supposed to do. That's the end of Earl's experience. Now, this guy's got, he's got some serious detail problems. He's like a scale one on the detail scale because, man, he's got a lot going on here, and yet he's given so little detail, he doesn't even use full sentences. But the experience is profound. Okay, he's floating above his body, floating above the accident scene, and clearly he's recognizing, well, I don't know if he's recognizing that he's dead, but clearly we have evidence that his body is dead because the ambulance attendants say, "Well, we don't have to worry about this one." I assume by that they mean we don't have to worry about rushing him to the hospital because he's already gone. Anyway, so it starts getting darker, and I don't know if that means there's a mist closing in, as many describe, or if he's going into a grayness or something, I don't know. But then he starts to move, and he says, faster and faster, darker and darker. So he's rushing through this tunnel that's getting darker and darker, super fast. And he says, "Like I'm in a tunnel." So it makes you wonder if maybe it's the speed that's causing the effect of a tunnel. I mean, how fast rushing through space, let's say a million times the speed of light, at what point would it look like a tunnel? You know, looks like on Star Trek or, you know, one of those things. But and then he says he sees a pinpoint of light that gets brighter and brighter. And suddenly he's stopped in front of the most perfect person he's ever seen. The light was coming from him. And then he recognizes him, which is interesting also. This is something that comes up over and over in near-death experiences. If you wonder whether or not you would recognize Jesus Christ, I think you would, because most people do. They just recognize him. And, you know, some people ask, "How did you know it was Jesus?" She's like, "I remembered him. I recognized him. I'd always known him." And they describe it as, you know, if I saw my mother, "Well, how do you know it was your mother?" "I know my mother," you know. And it's that kind of recognition. And in the spirit form, it goes even deeper, because not only do you know what they look like and their height and their smell, for that matter, whatever, but but you can feel their thoughts and feelings, and that would make them even more human and more of a person, more of a presence to you. And this is what seems to be taking place here. He sees Jesus Christ and he knows it's him. And then Jesus tells him, I'm sorry you can't stay, but because there is something you must do. But he says 25 years later, he's still wondering what it is that he's supposed to do. And that's so interesting to me. Interesting that it's so clear when people come, when they're sent back, you are going back for a reason. You have a purpose. You're too valuable. You can't be here yet. There's something really important you must do. Now, is that live out a long, drawn-out life? Is it help a stranger on, you know, November 28th, you know, 2025? I don't know. Or is it, you know, you have a whole career ahead of you doing this great thing, or maybe you're going to volunteer and change lives doing some kind of community work. It's going to be different for every person, and yet that sense of purpose is there. So interesting. Let's do one more. This is John. John says, I woke at about 7 a.m. on the weekday with difficulty breathing. As usual, I was under constant threat of asthma attacks. I woke my mother and told her, and she gave me some breath spray and some other medicine. These failed to work, so I was in for another trip to the doctor's. I often ended up at the doctor's and very rarely went as far as the hospital. I got into the doctor's about 8:30 a.m. and was made to wait until 10:30 a.m. when a doctor noticed I was in trouble and turning blue. I was rushed into surgery and given some needles. I don't know what they were, but they didn't work and I slowly worsened. About 11:30 a.m., my mother couldn't wait for the ambulance to take me to the hospital and raced me in her own car. Hang on a second. I thought he was already in the hospital. Maybe we're backtracking. Anyway, while running it up into reception, we were told to go... Oh, maybe the doctor told him to go from the clinic to the hospital. Anyway, while running into the reception, we were told to go straight up in the elevator. As we entered the elevator, my mother told me it was okay now and everything was going to be okay. But I could tell she wasn't sure. She was trying to calm me down. I gave up and relaxed and whispered, "Thank you, Mommy." It was then that I was drawn towards... It was then that I was drawn towards down, but not across, away from my eyes. Okay, so he's drawn to look away, down, across from his eyes. I was heading down a tunnel at an amazing speed. It was like everything else was moving, not me, leaving my eyes behind me like two little holes way off in the distance until they were completely gone. But I could still hear softly what was happening. I arrived, after what seemed 5 minutes, at a place I couldn't see, but could feel or sense. I felt an overwhelming joy and love come over me, like a stream going through my body. I was aware that the presence of my lady in white had arrived, and she was welcoming me. It wasn't a verbal communication. It was more as if she could feel what she wanted. Or as if I could feel what she wanted. I seemed to know the answers to my questions before I finished thinking about them, as if I always knew them. I was asked whether I liked it there, and did I want to stay? Of course I wanted to, but seemed to be given the knowledge that if I went back, I wouldn't be able to take back the knowledge. I was aware of knowing the reasons for living, as well as what I would have to do while I was to go back. But it was mainly hypothetical because I wasn't really wanting to come back. I believe the experience seemed to be a very long time there, about 2 hours. Most of the memories were left there, But in this world, it was approximately 15 minutes. These entities, spirits, or whatever words you want to use to describe these beings, were not of flesh and didn't seem restricted to physical limitations like we have. While I was there, I was indeed like them. I was prepared for this experience for about 4 years prior, from the age of 3, as I was visited by a lady in a white robe with a hood. She wore a robe with a rope for a belt and sandals on her feet, and never once spoke to me. She didn't need to, and I seemed to know that she was keeping an eye on me. Anyway, it was time for me to answer them on what I wanted to do, whether I wanted to stay or go back. It was then that I heard my mother get the news from the doctor on the top floor of the hospital that I had gone. He had said he was sorry. I asked my mother, was I dead when I got back? Because I heard the doctor say so. She was shocked. Not as shocked, though, as when I got back. After I heard my mother's desperate cries, I became undecided with these entities, and they smiled and seemed to understand. Then I was on the way back down the tunnel. This time it was much faster and seemed to take only 30 seconds. At the point of arrival, I took a deep breath, looked up at my mother, and then passed out. I was asleep for 2 days and woke as though nothing had happened. My asthma has never been life-threatening since. Something I would like to add was that while I was there, I knew I was in the real existence. For example, when I got back, I was in pain in my whole body, not from struggling to breathe, but from gravity. And like I was in a dream world, ever since I have seen this world as being not quite how things really are. The place in the dream compared with the clarity of thought of that place. If you want more information about how the experience has affected me, please don't hesitate to contact me by email. I would like the opportunity to talk to someone that has had the same experience I had, and to talk to people that know. I thought I was alone with this experience until I was 15, and on TV, a show called That's Incredible came on. And some other people in America were talking about the same things that I had been ridiculed over for 8 years. And that is the end of John's experience. Very interesting. Very interesting. I am curious whether John ever got a hold of anyone else who has had these kind of near-death experiences. And it would be interesting to talk to him, because it'd be interesting to know, first off, were there any things close where you got close to death as a baby or a young child that you've long forgotten, or anything like that? Because clearly he's seeing this lady in light, or lady of light, before his experience ever began, ever since he was like 3, he said. So it'd be interesting to know a little bit more detail about that. And then he's given a choice whether to come back. And it's interesting that he says that, you know, he's not planning on going, and he's thinking of this, you know, as he's understanding the reasons for living and why he needed to go back and what he needed to do in his life. He says, but it was all mainly hypothetical because I wasn't really wanting to come back. And that kind of reflects to me this thing that we see in potential futures, because you'll often hear of, you know, apocalyptic type things that are coming and so forth. And it's not that they're not, it is that they are given potential futures, you know, things that could be happening in the future. And they don't know if it's in their lifetime or, you know, 300 years down the line or what. Sometimes they're given a bit of a timeline, but they're almost always potential futures. And I think spirits, it appears, get that. They get the potential future thing. And when they come back, it's confusing because we're used to, well, if that was prophecy, then it's going to happen, you know. And even prophecy is often conditional. But, you know, we like to think of it like we do with fantasy movies where if this is given as a prophecy, it will happen. And if you try to prevent it from happening, that will cause it to happen and things like that. And that's not the way these things seem to work. What it is usually is that this is a potential future if you don't clean up your act. So clean up your act is what they're kind of saying. And in this case, he's just seeing the future that he would have if he went back to Earth. And, you know, he thinks it's hypothetical. He's like, I'm not going back. I don't plan on it anyway. But once he sees his mother and her reaction to hearing that he has died, his heart is touched. The beings around him understand and he is sent back. Not entirely clear if it was fully his choice or if it was more like his feelings made the choice for him. I'm not sure about that, but beautiful experience. Very interesting. If you would like to contact the podcast to share your experience or ask a question or leave a comment, you can do so by emailing neardeathexperiencepodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word. You can also call 970-NDE-CAST. And if you would like to contribute to the podcast, to become an ongoing monthly contributor, you can go to patreon.com/NDE-CAST and sign up there. That would help me a ton to get this going. So thank you. Whether you're just listening and not sharing comments, whether you're just listening and not reviewing or doing anything to help the podcast along, just your listening makes this worthwhile to me because, you know, I set out doing this partly because I'm passionate about the subject and had all this, you know, information that was going through my head from reading so much and studying so much that I had to get it out there. But as I started doing it and getting the responses that I got, I realized that this is something that is touching lives. It's making a difference for people. Some have said that it's restored their faith in Christianity. Others have said they've begun to pray again. You know, those kinds of things. And hearing just the comfort that it brings to know that there's life after death and that it's awesome, that brings me so much joy to hear that and to hear how people are being touched by that. So if you want to comment, tell me, you know, how it's affected you, I would much appreciate it. But if not, just thank you all of you so much again for listening.